Welcome to The Ugly Podcast, the place where creatives are encouraged to make messy, ugly art and to redefine their relationship to their inner critic. Every other week, I am joined by creatives of all mediums and methods to discuss our creative processes and how we navigate the mental minefield of creativity. This podcast serves as a reminder that you and your art get to be whatever the hell you want to be, ugly and all. Welcome back to the Ugly Podcast. It has been a while. I have missed doing this. And I have been stressing about getting out this first episode to people because I went on a hiatus and I like to be authentic in like telling about my life and talking about like the messy side of things, but I also don't want to like share my life story with people. So it's been stressful. But thankfully I, was with my dearest friend Emerson last weekend and talking about they started talking about time and how time feels weird and how it stretches and condenses and is so strange. And I was like, that's it. That's what I want to talk about. So I have Emerson here with me. Hi, Emerson.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here and to talk about time being weird.
Yay.
It has been so weird for both of us this whole year. So, so weird.
Yeah. 2023 was a year of mess. Absolute mess. So briefly for listeners, I went on a hiatus because I got a divorce last year. And I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty details of all of that, but I do want to talk about like how that time felt, because all of us go through seasons of grief and hard times, and continuing to do what you did before doesn't work in those times. You cannot just continue doing business as usual. And I mean, some people do. Some people use that as kind of a coping mechanism, but then they don't actually end up dealing with the grief that they're experiencing. So, you know, that wasn't going to work for me. So, yeah, it's been a very messy time and a time where I've gotten to know myself very well and a time where I couldn't do all the things and I had to just put things down, and hence why this podcast went on hiatus. And yeah, so I had more I wanted to say about this and I wrote it down because I knew I'd forget, and lo and behold, I forgot. Yeah, so I wanted to especially talk about this because I think the way that we've both handled this past year has been like very aligned with like the ugly way of doing things and like embracing the mess, embracing like crying at odd hours of the day, like taking just taking days to cry, and really abandoning the status quo or abandoning the regular business day, because you can't. You have to tend to your sad little human heart and take care of yourself. And we all need to do that. And so, yes, that's where we're at.
That is.
So, Emerson, your big, most recent grief was even more recent than mine. How is time feeling for you right now?
Yeah. Like you said, 2023 has been a messy, weird time year. So it goes hand in hand. I've got life and death in both hands. In June, I found out I was pregnant, which was not expected and not planned. It was a welcome surprise, but very much a surprise. And then very, very quickly, within 1 week, we knew that we were going to have to put my dog down. Before the baby came. And so as I've been pregnant and as I've been processing this pregnancy, we did, I carried my dog through his last months and his last weeks and hours and minutes, and beyond and after. And that has been really intense, holding the life and holding the future in one hand and holding the past and death in the other hand, and all of the emotions associated with both of those things and how they ebb and flow. And it's not that the life is good and the death is bad, you know, being there with him through his death and beyond has been really beautiful. Being there for my baby as they come into the world has been really hard. And so there's beauty and difficulty on both sides of it. And it's really frustrating to me when people are like, oh, that sucks that your dog died, but that's great, you're having a baby. You know, it's very overly simplistic.
It's very black and white. And
Like, I'm like, in some ways, my dog's death felt more comfortable. I was more prepared for it. And the birth is a lot more discombobulating. So it's, I've been all over the place on both of them. Cried a lot about my dog. Have had those days where I just cry 7 times a day. And in between, I might eat a little bit and take a shower or take a walk. I know how, you know how that's been. It's just a different flow of time. When you're tending to your feelings and your grief and the needs of the moment naturally as they come up, because our world doesn't do that. Our world is very like, you're clocking in at 9, you're going home at 5 or maybe 6 or 7. You're going to scarf down some food, then you're going to watch TV. And you know, you got to make time for your errands and your appointments. Like, it's very structured, very rational, linear time. And I am completely outside of that right now. And I think you have been too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you're talking, I was thinking of like bereavement time that people get off for like traditional jobs. Like, you get, what is it, 4 days for bereavement or something. It's something wild, like such a short amount of time. And it's like 4 days to like feel all, that's not how that works. I loved what you were saying about also about like the kind of two opposing sides, because like I think for me, my like quote-unquote good and my quote-unquote bad are like, you know, the divorce is quote-unquote bad, and then the my on the good side, I have like discovering my gender identity and like coming into myself more fully, and like that's been so beautiful and wonderful. And like, and then also on like this other side, I have like the divorce, which is, has also had its beautiful moments where, like, again, not going to go into details about it, but like, just, there's always, they're not just all good and all bad. They're these full moments that are just very rich in feeling and in, I lost my train of thought, but
I love what you're saying with that. And that goes too with my work. You know, if people don't know, I work with people living with dementia. I work actually especially with people who are afraid of getting dementia. And that's a lot of what we talk about there, is like, dementia is not an inherently entirely completely miserable experience. You're still a human. You still smile. You still connect with people. You still find meaning. And that's true of literally everything, literally every single experience we could possibly have, whether it's job loss, whether it's a sudden loss of, you know, a parent, whether it's, you know, anything, divorce, pet loss, all of this. Humans are capable of relating to them in so many different ways. And I think the word you used there was so fit, that it's rich. It's a very rich experience. It's very multidimensional, and you have all sorts of feelings, and they all coexist, and they're not good or bad. They just are. When I've been sobbing, agonized, I've also felt very content in that. You know, I'm like, hey, what we're doing right now is we are sobbing. And I'm doing it so well.
I am kicking this cry session's ass.
Yes. I am getting an A+.
Yes.
And extra credit too.
I remember when, cause I've continued to use art as a way to understand my grief and just process it in any given moment. And one thing, for some reason, like during kind of the height of the divorce and everything, whenever I would think about my grief, it was always green. And so like, I was talking to my therapist about this, and like, they were telling me like, well, grief is usually associated with like life and like new things, like growing and stuff. And I'm like, that's so interesting, because like, for me, like and like, grief is so like heavy. It's also like decomposing, and Yeah, it's a very rich color. It's a very like multifaceted like color that popped into my head, and it popped into my head every single time. So I wrote a little poem called "Grief Is Green."
Oh, I love that. It's so beautiful. I've been gravitating a lot towards poetry, especially with my dog. I've written about the baby too, and life in general, but I think there's something about loss that brings up an intensity of needing to process poetically. I read a quote, I can't remember who it was from, and it was so beautiful, but it was something about like, when something exists, you don't need words to describe it, but when it's gone, the loss, the absence, you're like searching for those words to be like, where are you? How do I like bring you into?
Yeah.
And
that
I have
is so true.
It is. I have written so much around breakups and losses, and yeah, and it helps so much. And I've written a lot about my dog and loved what I've written. It feels like he's kind of been there in that process. And yeah, I'm losing my train of thought now. something about creativity. I love the Ugly podcast.
I know. Using poems to process those feelings and to give structure to them, I think has been really valuable for me. And yeah, like when we have those feelings of grief or depression or things that just seem out of our control, that live in our bodies, but that don't, like, it seems like a different reality from what's going on around you. And so then making the art can like turn it into more of a reality and like help you process it more.
Yeah. And I liked what you were saying about like your grief being green, and just some of the ways you talk about kind of the intuitiveness of your art. I think that's such a powerful way to step outside of time and step outside of rationality and like harness the experience and work with it. I've had similar things come up of just visualizations and imagery and certain colors seeming really strongly associated with my dog and things like that. And I love that. It's playful. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten really in my head of like, is that really like his spirit, or like, is this really, you know, like needing that tangibility and rationality. And I've started to just embrace, like, I'm just going to go with whatever I feel inclined towards.
Yeah.
And really writing that the timelessness and the intuition go really hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, totally. So speaking of timelessness, you told me that you were reading this book called 4,000 Weeks. And as you were telling me about this, this is what like kicked my brain into like, this is what you want to talk about. This is how you need to come back with the podcast. So tell us about this book.
I love this book. I just finished reading it. It changed my life. So it's called 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals by Oliver Berkman. I will say that again so people can write it down. 4,000 Weeks.
I will have it in the show notes. It'll be there.
Good. Yes. So 4,000 Weeks. Oh my gosh, I loved it. So the concept, I'll start with the concept. This author said the average lifespan is around 4,000 weeks. Of course, it could be far less or more, but we get about 4,000 weeks. And most people, when they hear that, they go, that's not very much time. And you get the sense of urgency. I need to do more with my time. How do I get more productive? How do I do more of what I want to do? And his premise is how amazing that we get 4,000 weeks at all, and how fun could it be to say, what am I going to do with this week or this day or this hour? And loosening ourselves from those restrictions of feeling like we have to do everything on our to-do list. And so the concept, the time management for mortals concept, is we are mortal. Our time is limited. We're not going to be able to do everything, especially in our society. We are not going to be able to respond to every demand and do everything as perfectly as we're being told we should. We can't kill it at work and at home and doing exercise and staying on top of all of our errands. You just can't do everything. And so the whole premise is, what do you want to do? What is important to you? Pick a couple of things and then do those well, and love them and enjoy the process. And that is just absolutely changing my whole world, because I've been very, very constricted to my to-do list, very stressed out by it. Still am too, and I'm still processing it. But the 4,000 weeks has been very powerful for me.
I had to look this up. I have been alive for 1,663 weeks as of my birthday.
Oh my God. And I was born within the same week as you. So
yeah,
me
so
too.
It'll be about the same.
My first thought was, I want to look up how long I have been. And then I was like, wait.
We're the same age, a week apart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, because the scarcity mindset wants to come in of just like 4,000 weeks, that's not a lot. But this alternate mindset of like expansiveness and choice of like, yeah, I mean, 4,000 weeks, sure, maybe it's not a lot, but that's also a way you can embrace your day to day and embrace what you have and prioritize what actually matters. And what actually matters is that you are a human being who will die and you should enjoy this life however you want. And that just like makes it so expansive and freeing to think of it that way.
I want that as a sound clip. You are a human being who will die and you should enjoy it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think that's come up for me a lot. I enjoyed the shit out of every single moment with my dog, mm-hmm. especially in his last year and a half, because he has torn his CCLs. And so he was partially disabled. So I had to do a lot of accommodating and supporting for him to have a meaningful life. And I just loved every single walk we had and every single moment, every single snuggle. And then as I prepare to have a baby, I want to have that mindset too of like, especially because we're only planning on having one, mm-hmm. every single thing, like the day that they're born, that's the one day that they're born. And
yeah.
those first few weeks, those are the only first few weeks and the first of their 4,000 weeks, hopefully. And I just want to enjoy it all so much. And mm-hmm. I don't want my to-do list and my perfectionistic standards about how intensely structured my business should be or, you know, how clean my home should be. I don't want that getting in the way of that.
Yeah. And that also, it helps you figure out what you want to enjoy the most. And also just like, nope, I lost my train of thought again. This is, it's the first episode back. It's, what did you expect
I think it's very fitting. I think it's supposed to be this way. Like this is the uh-huh. mindset we're in these days.
Yeah.
And it's fine, you know, yeah. like we're just following different trails and then they stop and we turn around and go somewhere else.
Truly. Oh, so many trails that I keep going down and then it's just like, no. Yeah. And I think that's part, like, along with like grieving this part of my life that is now gone or changing at least, like there's a lot of opportunities for discovery and exploration. And that's one thing that I've been prioritizing with my time is this idea of what do I want right now in this moment and going down a little rabbit trail and then halfway down being like, I don't know why I thought this was a good idea. or like sometimes it is a good idea. I'm like, yes, I'm glad I went this direction. But other times I'm like, I don't know where I am. I'm going to turn around. Mm-hmm. But it is, yeah, lots of exploration and thinking out loud and also giving a lot of space for my writing to be that way of like, I'm just going to write what's happening in my brain. And sometimes it's absolute nonsense. But that's where my brain is at. And maybe it will make sense later. Maybe it just never will.
Mm-hmm. I love nonsense. I love playing with it. Have you listened to or read Welcome to Night Vale?
I've heard of it, but I haven't actually listened to it.
You should look up even just like an excerpt from the book or something. It's just so playfully nonsensical. Uh-huh. And I want my brain to do more of that. Like when yeah. I let myself play around with language that way, like it talks all about like angels and it'll be like, I just remember this line about like the high school graduates, something about the high school graduates and a bunch of them were tarantulas. And you're like, what? like, you want to know more. You're like, tell me more about this. And there's, it's just nonsense. You know, it's just like, yeah, some of the high school graduates are tarantulas and there are angels that work at the gas station, you know, like it just, and it's just so fun. And I love that concept of bringing that into where we're at in life and into the creative expression we have around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's, and then actually that kind of, I'm kind of processing in the moment as I say that. I feel that way about my dog. I call him my spirit dog. Mm-hmm. And I'm a very like agnostic person. I have some spirituality, but it's very like loose and like vague. And I don't like believe that crystals work and that tarot is like channeling a higher power and that like I have an actual physical spirit dog. But like I also do. Like I've been letting myself just be like, I have a spirit dog and I go and I sit under trees with him and, you know, I see him and feel him and just letting myself, like, it doesn't need to be sensical. I don't need to like know for sure. I don't have to sign a contract being like, yes, I believe this entirely as like a tangible fact of the universe. I can just be like, I love my spirit dog.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. I was listening to Jinx Monsoon talk about their witchcraft practice, and they were interviewing another witch, and they were like, I don't actually believe any of this works, and I also believe so passionately that it does work.
Exactly. Yes, I love that. And I think that rationality, like our rational world, is what wants to force us into saying it. Like if someone hears you're a witch, then they do. They want you to sign a contract being like, I believe 100% in this witchcraft that I am practicing. Mm-hmm. And I believe that it is a fact of existence. And it's just not like that. Like that's a constriction of the rational world, that when you go into something like witchcraft or creativity or a timeless season of life, you can just be like, that doesn't apply. That's irrelevant.
Yeah. So also during this time of my life, I got my first tarot deck, or it was an oracle deck, my first oracle deck. But then I did just buy a tarot deck last week. Anyway, but I immediately fell in love with this deck because like I was very much of like, I know that these aren't real. I know these are pieces of paper. I love this as like a creative thought prompt and like whatever. And then as I started using it, I'm like, no, these are real. I don't know. My first like three card pulls were the exact same card. And the card was that like, it was all about like skepticism and like not really believing magic is magic. And I was just like, I got that 3 days in a row. And I was just like, this is hilarious. Like, and now whenever that card comes, like I haven't pulled that card since then because I'm like, no, this deck absolutely is going to tell me what I need to hear. I don't know how. I don't think that there are like spirits, but somehow I keep hearing what I need to hear from this deck. And that's all I know. And that's all I care about. Like, yep. And so, and I haven't pulled that card since, which is so funny. But yeah, I think loosening the bounds of how we feel like we need to experience something is so freeing and gives us so much space to just be more human and feel what we're feeling and experience magic and joy in whatever capacity that is going to give to us.
Yeah. I have definitely felt a lot of magic in my grief and in my pregnancy and in my life in general. And yeah, I just love it. I love what can come up when we're open to it. And when we let ourselves cry all day or make some art with our green grief.
Yeah. Yes.
I think a lot too about how little access we have to that, how little encouragement or support we have around it, that we really are encouraged to see, you know, divorce is bad, pet loss is bad, dementia is bad. These are terrible experiences. And, you know, you will be miserable if they happen and you'll be hopeless to that. And it's so powerful to just see our humanity, see what comes up with our creativity, see what we learn, see how we grow. And find that we can even sometimes enjoy the process. We can enjoy grieving our dog.
Yeah. This might sound very weird, but I feel like after experiencing, because like I have never experienced grief like I have experienced in the last 6 months. I've had a grandparent die, but I've never had like something so intense and close to me happen. And ever since then, I feel like more of a person. Like it feels like I feel like an adult now. That's what it took. It wasn't getting married. It wasn't moving out of my parents' house. It wasn't getting a job. It wasn't starting my business. It was going through and experiencing grief that made me feel like, oh, I've actually like experienced most of the human condition. Like I feel more human and I feel like I can relate to more humans. Yeah. I don't have you. Do you feel that at all? Or is that just me?
Yeah, no. What I'm hearing from what you're saying, one, it resonates. And two, like I feel like grief is a rite of passage into being more deeply human.
Yes.
And yeah. I think that's 100% something that's been happening in our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a rite of passage. It's something we will all experience at some point. Mm-hmm. And yet it's also something that not everybody like knows how to experience or like knows mm-hmm. how to deal with it because of the strictness of how we have decided it. You have to be a functioning person in society. Mm-hmm. And like, we don't often let grief overcome us and like, actually feel how awful it feels at times mm-hmm. and like and face it and let it be there and not try to change it or get rid of it. Yep. Future Lauren here with a little disclaimer. With that last statement I said, I did not mean to insinuate that I am a grief guru and have followed this process so perfectly that actually grief has made me transcend humanness. That is not what I meant. I also find grief to be messy and confusing and hard to accept. And I think that that is something that we all experience, and grief is hard. And I didn't mean that there was like one all right way to feel your feelings, and only meant to say that in our society, it is hard to make space to handle those hard emotions. And we often aren't allowed that time, especially when we are in the midst of other horrible things happening. So that was all I meant by that. Okay, back to present Lauren.
Yeah, I feel like our approach to all those different things is you have to suffer. And then you also have to pretend like you're not suffering.
Yeah.
And that's a very, very bad recipe for grief and for a rite of passage. You know, I've been learning more about rites of passage. They talk about pregnancy as one, which of course not everyone will go through that rite of passage. We all have our different ones. But rites of passage often traditionally have had a lot of support around them and a lot of structure and ritual and celebration and all of this different stuff we don't do. Mm-hmm. So we do have, you know, if grief is a rite of passage, we are very poorly equipping people to move through it. And so most people aren't, they just get stuck in it and it just stays a really big, bad, scary thing that they are suffering from instead mm-hmm. of something that they feel they, you know, we're able to become more deeply human, become more in touch with their feelings and their loved one or their experience or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. I know we got totally off topic from like time, but I like where this conversation went.
That's a point though. That's
I know.
Perfect.
It's perfect. I know. It's perfect. I only said that because the only other like question I had prepared for today is like back on the topic of time. But I mean, I don't even have to ask it. I'm just trying to think of like, what else can we explore today?
Mm-hmm. One of the things I've been exploring related to timelessness is what's next.
Mm.
Because, you know, what's next is usually a very rational, like, oh, what's the next step kind of thing. But like, if we are opening to a more expansive way of being in the world, it also begs a question of like, what's next? How do we want this to unfold? What do we want our lives to look like? If we could release all of that kind of rigidity and perfectionism and expectation and suppression, you know, what would be next?
Mm. I like that. That's basically what I've been asking myself in like my daily life of like, I've been phrasing it of like, what can I do for myself right now? Or what do I need right now? And like, in order to just like intentionally think, how do I want to form this next step? Like, how do I want to form this next part of the day? Very intentionally and like full of like improvisation and yeah. It's been a very interesting way to also just get more in touch with who I am as a person. I think especially like growing up the way we did in like strict religious environments where your will isn't really prioritized, your desires aren't prioritized. And so then if you want to return to those, it's very hard to be like there have been times where I've like just stood in the middle of a room and looked around and I'm like, what do I want right now? Like, I don't know. it's so weird to like get back in touch with who you are and what you want. And also like how you can heal, how you can experience this next part of life. It is full of choices that are hard to choose from. And sometimes it feels like complete overwhelm. But sometimes it's also just very freeing to ask what's next and like, okay, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Throwing out the map.
Yes.
Actually, that reminded me of a Kermit the Frog quote. I put this in our baby's guest book that we made, and my grandma really liked it. Let's see. Okay, yes. This is a good quote to read for this conversation. So it says, the places you're going to are never on the map. And once you get that map out, you won't be able to refold it no matter how smart you are. So forget the map, roll down the windows, and whenever you can, pull over and have a picnic with a pig.
Oh, that's from that.
Jim Henson, the creator of Kermit the Frog and the Muppets.
That's so good. I love that.
Yeah. I think that's essentially what I'm doing with my life is like I'm throwing out the map and I'm having a picnic with a pig now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's I think this is a quote in Untamed by Glennon Doyle, but also her daughter wrote a song that I've been listening to a lot during this time. And there's a line in it that says, we're not gonna keep asking people directions to places they've never been.
Yeah. That is a good line.
Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. I love that too because no one has been to our future. Mm-hmm. No one has been to where we're supposed to be, who we're supposed to be. So really all we can do is just exist and move forward on our life path and like learn from others, of course, and ask for guidance, but also like the destination is completely unique to us and we get to discover it and figure out how we want to get there.
Yeah. And we have approximately 4,000 weeks to do so.
Yes. Yes. Plenty of time.
Plenty of time. Yeah. Yeah. 1,600 weeks of being alive it doesn't seem like that long.
Yeah. It's really weird having read 4,000 weeks. Knowing that my baby is about to start at week one.
Yeah.
And knowing, like, I love my life path. I love where life has taken me, all the highs and lows and chaos and beauty. And knowing, like, now I get to accompany someone else on theirs. And who knows? Like, who knows what their life path is going to look like? And both my spouse and I are just so excited to just, like, accompany and support them on whatever that may be. And, like, I'm so excited for their 4,000 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. I'm excited to be there too.
Yeah. And you'll be there for many of those weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. Well, that feels like a good natural stopping point. Is there anything ugly that you've made recently?
Oh gosh, everything. You know, everything's felt so ugly, but I haven't been like actually like channeling the ugliness. And so I will take this as a homework assignment to myself, a very non-rational homework assignment, especially before birth. I've heard that creative expression can be really powerful in this season of life. So I'm going to take all the ugliness of everything that's been happening and channel it into some paint and collage. And
I love that.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun.
Nice. I like that.
What about you?
I recently have been having fun playing with, you know, like the little like caterpillary remains of like notebook paper that you tear out. And then they're like the little caterpillary like piece after the perforation. So I have been playing around with those during my D&D sessions. And at one point I made like what's that place in Italy where the gladiators fought? Colosseum. I made like a tiny little Colosseum.
Oh, wow. That is impressive.
And then I also made like a little tiny like lion.
Nice.
And then the last time I did that, I made a little crown and then started making like flames on it, and then I burnt the tips of it.
Ooh.
So it's like a little flaming burnt crown.
Amazing.
It looks like nothing, but it's fun.
I love it. That's awesome.
I've just like needed something to do with my hands and playing with like, I found it very fun to like fold paper and just like rip paper in like different ways. Like when I went to a play with my mom not that long ago, and with the billfold thing or the playbill, I just started like bending the pages in different ways, and then I ended up making this like cool hexagon thing that was like very structured and like solid feeling, and like, I don't know, it's been fun to like make more like structured pieces, and like, yeah, I like it.
You're getting into sculpture. Into sculpture.
I guess so, yeah. I have been having a lot of fun with collage and just ripping paper up. But like so many of my collage pieces, I don't intend for them to be ugly, or I intend for them not to look like anything, and they end up being like really cool. I'm like, damn.
I love how collage comes together. I was just talking with someone, another collage artist, who we were saying it's like you're collaborating with the universe when you make it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like you're personally directing the outcome, because I've been surprised every single collage I've ever made.
Yeah. So fun. Okay. Thank you for joining me on my first episode back. I was very nervous to do this and still feel very vulnerable after talking about all this. But
I think it's all very in line with everything we've always talked about.
I know. Like, it totally is.
People are going to be like, well, yeah, obviously.
Well, yeah, I know. And it's, yeah, I think it's really just, yeah, I don't know. I feel like those first, I know it's not a first like putting this out, but like it's those kind of natural like launch jitters of just like, ah, I'm doing this thing again. I'm about to become more visible. Ah, time to hide. Yep. Which I think is a very natural reaction. Yep. So thank you everybody for listening and letting me be vulnerable and show my authentic self and my authentic journey with you all. And thank you, Emerson, for being here and for sharing your authentic journey with everybody. And keep it ugly, everybody.
Keep it ugly.
The Ugly Podcast is created by me, Lauren Alexander of Scribe and Sunshine. It is produced and sort of edited, also by me, and written and directed by absolutely nobody. If you like the podcast, be sure to rate and leave a review on your preferred platform and share with the creative people in your life. If you're interested in learning more about what I do, head to scribeandsunshine.com to learn more about my Ugly Art 101 course, my Perfectionism Workshop, my editing services, and The Writer's Helm, which is an online community for writers co-captained by myself and Gabby Goodlow. As always, keep it ugly.